Welcome to the Security Weekly News wrap-up for the week of 3 May 2020, the month, well, actually now the second month that time forgot. April was the month that time forgot, but May's starting out that way. Today, show news, no more foreign power equipment allowed. Apple Google bans the use of GPS and tracking apps. Power supply oohs and ahs, and the love bug remembered. All this and more on Security Weekly News wrap-up.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals, by security professionals.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
It's the show that keeps you up to date on the latest security news twice a week, your trusted source for accurate security information and expert analysis. It's time for Security Weekly News. As technology continues to evolve and expand, so have the countless ways our critical systems can be put in jeopardy. Ransomware attacks, misconfiguration, user error, and malicious threat actors, to name a few. As IT infrastructures continue to grow and diversify, how do you ensure stable security? Core Security, a help systems company, provides an analytics-driven, layered approach to security with a portfolio that enables both proactive and reactive responses. With Core Security, you can reduce risk by limiting access, detect upcoming and active threats, test for security weaknesses, and efficiently monitor data for actionable insights. To learn more, visit securityweekly.com/core security. The question is simple. Have any of the systems on my network been compromised? The answer is harder than it should be. Enter AI Hunter. Active Countermeasures has automated and streamlined techniques used by the best pen testers and threat hunters in the industry to create AI Hunter, a network threat hunting solution that does the first pass of a hunt for you to identify systems that are most likely to be compromised and scores the results on a scale from 0 to 100. You can then research those systems in depth with AI Hunter. Focus your valuable time on the systems that need your expertise with AI Hunter. Sign up for a personal demo today at securityweekly.com/ACM.
Hello, I'm Doug White from Roger Williams University, your host, and welcome to the Security Weekly News wrap-up show. First, let's wrap up the show topics for the week. On Application Security Weekly number 106, Mike, Matt, and John had an interview with Gareth Rushgrove, who's the Director of Product Management at Sneak. They were talking about modern AppSec and one of my favorites, container security. They really dig into the Docker Kubernetes stuff on this show, so it's definitely worth checking out if you're doing that, you're interested in container security, or even just the straight up AppSec stuff. It's well worth taking a look. On Business Security Weekly number 172, Paul, Jason, and Matt had a news segment on how to stay productive, something we all struggle with. In the given situation, considering the bar is right over there. And so that was a fairly timely topic. They also had an interview, and this is such a great interview, with Graham Payne, the aptly named Graham Payne, who was the senior VP and CIO of Global Corporate Platforms at Equifax. And Graham was identified as the human error component in the Equifax data breach, a very infamous Equifax data breach, and was fired from there just before the CEO testified and called him the human error to Congress. Graham is currently the president of Cybersecurity for Executives, so a very interesting thing to watch and hear from Graham about that. On Enterprise Security Weekly number 182, John, Matt, and Paul had a tech segment called Why the Cloud Stall is Now the Cloud Surge, which is a very timely topic because we've certainly seen that going on as people are trying to figure out the best way to allow people to remote and so forth. That interview or that tech segment was with Matt Cawthorn, who's the VP of Sales, and Ted Driggs, who's the head of product. Both at ExtraHop, which and ExtraHop's one of my favorite company names right now. I really like that name. I wish I had thought of it. A second tech segment on that show was about effective goal setting and tracking with Justin Buchanan, who's a senior manager of solutions, vulnerability management, and offensive security at our friend Rapid7. Just two great segments, well worth watching all those shows. On Security Weekly News number 31, special guest Corey Thune, who's from Gravwell, and I talked about a bunch of things, including the news. But we did talk a lot about data point collection, which is sort of Gravwell's thing. In regards to COVID-19 tracking, which I felt was a pretty relevant topic. Corey's always fun to have on, and he's a regular on, you know, different shows. So it's always nice to see somebody jump on Security Weekly News. On Security and Compliance Weekly number 27, Jeff, Matt, Josh, and Scott, their first segment was called PCI Drink, The Rise of PCI. And everyone that watches Security Weekly knows that Jeff's pet topic is PCI, and that always has been kind of a joke on Pulse Security Weekly about drinking whenever somebody says PCI. Now, the show was airing around 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so maybe in your time zone the bar was open. Or, you know, it's like plague drinking. So with the plague drinking, the bar is always open. And apparently, you know, along with all this, you know, shelter in place orders, it's been okay to drink at 12 noon whenever someone says PCI. A second segment on the Security and Compliance show was called PCI, A New Hope. And Jeff and the host were talking about, well, you know, more PCI, so more drinks. And but PCI is a critical issue in the current. It's actually always been a critical issue, and it's, you know, even more relevant now than it was, say, you know, 2 months ago. And of course, you know, plague drinking. I mean, what are you going to do? On Pulse Security Weekly tonight, dun dun dun. Is this a reveal? It's actually not. It's we're doing the news a day early for logistical reasons. And so Pulse Security Weekly has not aired yet today, but I will tell you all about it so you can tune in later. An interview with Chris LG of the Massachusetts Army National Guard and Jim McPherson from ISO New England. Both lots of fun people. I don't know how Chris got permission to put that picture up from the National Guard, but apparently they're more laid back than they used to be. They're going to be talking about something that I think is very germane, public utility security and National Guard support. There's a lot of buzz around public utilities and public infrastructure security. And I certainly did a lot of, I wrote two or three exercises for police guard units way back when, and some of them revolve very heavily around public utilities. One of the ones I participated in was about solar flares, you know, taking out electrical grids and things like that. Very interesting stuff, and Chris is always fun to be around. Chris is currently the core NetWars tournament design lead and a pen tester, and he does the counter hack holiday hack. So he does a lot of cool stuff and has fun storylines and all those things. And Jim was a sniper in the Army among all of his other cyber experience. So when he was in the Army, he was, you know, one of those. Yeah. And so you should probably watch their segment or else. Yeah, I don't know. In the tech segment tonight, Mick Douglas is going to be on. He's the owner and founder of InfoSec Innovations, and he'll be talking about Project Fantastic, which is subtitled Bringing the CLI, I say CLI, some people say CLI, the command line interface, let's call it that. Bringing the command line interface to the GUI users, something I am a huge fan of, is being sure, and there's so many jokes I want to make, but I'm not going to. Should be a fun segment. And of course, the Security Weekly news that we could make. Sorry, I'm still thinking up jokes, and I'm not going to say them. my daughter asked for tonight. My daughter asked me to make Corpse Revivers number 2 for the show. So if you aren't familiar with that old drink, it's a good one. And I did put the recipe on the wiki. So that's my continuing and on. I have two ongoing obsessions during the plague. One is Lillet, and the other one is AWS Lambda. So I'm trying to mix those two things together. So I do enjoy wearing a mask into the liquor store. It's kind of a, you know, it's a reversal of fortunes. It's a little weird too. You know, you always think, you know, walk into a liquor store wearing a mask and, you know, the liquor store owner's got a double barrel shotgun. Yeah, exactly. So it's always kind of interesting. My favorite thread of the week, I think this week I decided to do COVID tracking apps. I had a bunch of stories in the news on Tuesday about these. I've been asked numerous questions from clients and others about these things. There seems to be just a plethora of issues moistly seething here. And I think the first issue I'm going to bring up in this regard is about rapid development of apps. Whenever I start seeing and hearing emergency development, you know, ultimate priority, ultra priority, and all these other kind of things that we've all seen at some point in our careers, I start getting worried. Anytime somebody came to me as a developer and said, we need this, it has to be done ASAP, marketing promised it would be out the door by Friday at noon, and you haven't started yet, what? You know, you start to get really kind of nervous about how those apps are going to work. And the more people tell me those apps are going to be safe and secure, the more nervous I get. And certainly in the last week, we've seen everything from the president of the United States calling out Google and saying, you know, they're developing a solution to this. And that they're going to rapidly develop it, to the governor of Rhode Island sort of calling out Salesforce in, it was very similar. So there was a big news story about that where the governor of Rhode Island basically said Salesforce is developing a solution. And it would appear that Salesforce is doing something. They have a website called work.com, but they have something there. They have a demo link, you know, but it's sort of a coming soon thing. And I, you know, I don't know if that was one of those things where somebody was talking to somebody and all of a sudden this, the Politico goes on television and says, oh, yeah, the solution is here. So it's kind of like marketing saying you're going to have it all out the door by Friday afternoon. But that stuff worries me a lot. You wonder how much security is going to be involved in rapid development and deployment of apps like this, and that people may be required to use them. So I have been asked multiple questions by different people about what if we implement this at my company? What if we implement this over there? What if we require people to have this? And you may be saying, no way in hell I'm doing that. I'm not cooperating with the government, whatever. But a lot of these are company questions that I'm getting. So I'm not getting called by the government. I'm getting called by private companies, which can require employees to do stuff like this. So that's worrisome. Confidentiality is worrisome. You know, can they maintain this data and what data is it going to be? So my other big question there was, what is it going to actually be? So the the Apple Google Consortium says that their app will not maintain any data except on the local phone. And they're going to use Bluetooth and it's going to be all confidential and on and on and on. There's not a lot of detail there yet. I'm not sure how that works. I don't really know how, if there's no, you know, identifying information, how the other phones get notified when one phone is determined to be contaminated. All that I read was this is all, an opt-in. You tell the phone, hey, I'm infected. And, you know, we all know how zombie movies work. And there's always that guy that gets bitten and, you know, covers it up with his sleeve and yeah, that kind of stuff. But I do think we're going to have to look at these apps very carefully as they are rolled out very quickly over the next month, because I assure you the black hats are going to be looking at them. And of course, scammers are going to be targeting people using these apps and other apps. They already are. And so, you know, here's an app that you're told you have to put in that's named almost what the app was that you're required to have, and you approve it and give it all kinds of permissions. And there's another news story down here. So on with the news then. I couldn't help but put this one back in. Ben-Gurion University in Israel, always the home of esoteric exfiltration, has another one. So Mordechai Gurion this week demonstrated that by manipulating the CPU load, the power supply, and we all know that, you know, you've seen this if you run, folding apps or you run simulations or even games or things, you know, as you put more CPU load on, the power supply has to up the power. And that frequency change of the power causes, apparently, the transformers and capacitors to emit sounds like, you know, like, ooh, ah, you know, that kind of sound. I can't hear this, but apparently this research, I don't think he can hear it either, but apparently just like many things, many devices have much better hearing than humans and definitely better hearing than me. And the receiver, which was in this case, I think it was a phone, could actually pick up the signals from these oohing and aahing capacitors. They didn't describe it that way. That was just my fantasy of it. But it was something like they were getting 50 bits per second at 5 meters distance. So that would be, say, a 16-byte password in about 2.5 seconds. So that's pretty impressive. Now, I saw a whole bunch of rips on this on Alt 2600 because they said, oh, well, you know, you call it air gap, but then how did the malware get on it? But, you know, I'll tell you, you know, the taco truck Tuesday attack with the USB keys, I mean, if it works. So there's no reason somebody doesn't get malware onto an air gap machine. And of course, you still have to have some kind of listening device within, you know, the distance there. So, you know, is it a practical attack? I don't know, but it was a very, very cool attack. I love these guys. They're always coming up with these super cool things. In the line of the threat of the week, then, Apple and Google announced that they would ban the use of location tracking in apps on their platforms. The joint project basically said they didn't want governments to be able to track people's movements and find individuals based on their cell phone. And of course, basically, if you allowed that, probably no one would use the app. And you know, that they valued and held sacrosanct the citizens' privacy, and it was the main goal of the project. But developers in several of these states that are already opening had already indicated that in order to use their apps to actually figure this stuff out, they were going to have GPS tracking data. Google App Goo said they didn't want to go down that road. It's still not clear how effective any of these apps are going to be because, you know, again, self-reporting. Some of the apps, you know, some phones automatically disable Bluetooth power if it's not being used. So it may turn itself off. People may turn it off. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of issues with these apps. Microsoft Teams and Sway, so this is two different Microsoft products, both have targeting situations going on currently. Sway is a presentation application from Microsoft that was being targeted by a tool called Persuasion, which is a phishing attack framework, and so far has netted around 156 high-level executives, mostly in the U.S. and mostly in the financial industry. This one is really just a phishing attack that is delivered through this Sway tool from Microsoft and has emails and PDF documents that contain a phishing kit that was apparently developed or may be developed in Vietnam. The Teams vulnerability is more sophisticated than this. Basically, the Teams vulnerability was found to be an authentication token that was vulnerable that gets passed to authenticate GIFs when those are exchanged between users. So essentially what was happening with that was an evil attacker could push an evil GIF into your evil petting zoo on Teams. And then that token is exchanged and they could capture the token. And when they have this token, then they can use that to compromise those Teams account. The article I put on the wiki has a full treatment of it. So if you want to read all the grim details, there's even some worm-like capabilities of these GIFs. And yes, I'm going to keep saying GIFs because GIF is a kind of squished up peanut butter, you know, paste. So, or peanut paste, which is called peanut butter. Yeah, exactly. But the result of this is a compromise of team accounts. So some things to take a look at there. I think those were patched, but, you know, we all know how that goes. Just when you thought it was safe to ignore cross-site scripting attacks, I know you weren't, but a group has been retargeting WordPress. And again, I know this is sometimes I see these stories and I go, yeah, when did that stop? But apparently WordPress being targeted in a big way, more than 20 million attacks against close to a million different sites had occurred on the 3rd of May. Most of these cross-site scripting attacks were targeting vulnerable plugins and vulnerable themes that have been patched. But we all know that people don't, especially WordPress, people don't patch these things. And so somebody realized this stuff was out there. The script that was being used, if you're not logged into the site, it redirects to a malvertising site. But if you are logged in, so there's an active account, when this attack occurs. Apparently, it can inject a PGP Trojan and a piece of JavaScript malware. So, you know, come on, patch up your sites. But I know it's tough to do. The United States banned purchase of bulk power grid equipment, which is designed, developed, manufactured, or supplied by persons owned by, controlled by, or subject to the jurisdiction or direction of foreign adversaries, etc. This was done by executive order. This leaves a lot open to speculation about what all this means for bulk power providers who buy most of their equipment from, you know, other countries. And probably one of those categories applies to just about everybody. If you aren't familiar with executive orders, it's the modern approach in the United States to legislation. Basically, the president writes something on a sheet of paper and says, you know, I want everybody to have to drink blueberry smoothies on Fridays. And apparently, since Congress can't seem to do or pass anything, and, you know, since, you know, way back in the Clinton administration, everything just seems to be an executive order anymore. This is probably a response to a lot of well-documented attacks on foreign power grids and foreign power grid equipment, as well as other types of equipment like that, and fear of exploits being embedded in these ICS type systems, which are used in critical infrastructure. I will reiterate, I reported this before, EventBot malware can compromise banking and financial apps if your people are using Android devices. EventBot is a Trojan. It specifically targets the information contained in and used by a very large spectrum of banking and financial apps that are on Android devices, like, you know, just literally like, you know, bank, you know, Trans South Bank. I hope it's not a real bank. I was trying not to name anybody for real. Sorry, Trans South, if you're a real bank. Trans South, and if you aren't, and you're going to use the name, I want to cut. Trans South Bank, you know, app is giving up in all these things that it contains in there. So far, apparently, this is, I reported this thing earlier, but apparently there have only been samples uploaded to VirusTotal. They don't have any evidence that it's actually been used in the wild. It does ask for a lot of permissions on install, and of course, then it could harvest banking information from these apps on the phone. And finally, it was the 20th anniversary of the Love Bug, or I Love You email worm, and boy, did we love the Love Bug. This thing was an absolute nightmare back in 2000. It really woke, but there was some good news about it. It really woke up a lot of management to the threat that the very, you know, new internet in 2000, the internet was a very fledgling thing. And a lot of management, I was told that, you know, it didn't pose a threat, that only the quote was something like, only weird people like you would be using this thing. Suddenly there's this email worm. I was able to get lab funding out of this, but basically I Love You was a worm that accessed your Outlook address book, and it forwarded copies of itself to everyone in the address book from you. So they were, you know, at least somewhat likely to open it, and it spread like wildfire, because apparently, unlike me, getting an email from your Uncle Mel that said, I love you, and had a love letter attached, didn't seem weird. So you clicked it. I first got it from a person who worked at the university where I worked that didn't really seem like the love letter type, and most certainly wouldn't have been sending one to me regardless. But while I was sitting there wondering what the hell it was, our whole email system crashed from just literally being wiped out by this thing spreading. And then, of course, every time we would get it, we would reboot and bring the email system back online. Somebody would click the thing again and it would immediately start spreading. And the minute it spread, you know, just like all great worms, it was just almost uncontrollable. But when we were talking to the board later about why this happened, I was asked to testify to the board of that university, you know, them and the IT group. This was not Roger Williams University. This was somewhere else a long time ago. But basically, when we were talking to the board, they said, why was this not dealt with? And, you know, IT and me both said, we asked for money to, you know, to secure some of this, and you said it wasn't necessary. So we did get some of our funding out of that. And that is the news wrap up for the week of 3 May 2020 in the time of plague in the month and months that weren't. Please wear a mask. Get a cool one from my friend Claire. If you don't have her address, let me know and I'll get it for you. My mother is old and she's at risk, and that's why you're wearing it. I'm Doug White from Arty Online Security Cybersecurity Program at Roger Williams University. I'll see you next week on the network that never shuts down, Security Weekly. Read the science and stay safe. Thanks.